Keem Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Big D from the Ball Podcast. It's an honor to have you on the Chicago Bullseye. How you doing, Big D? What's going on, man?
Man, I'm doing great. As always, it is a pleasure and an honor to come on and be on your show. This is when Chris and I knew that we knew what we were talking about when we did our podcast, when you started bringing us on. So I appreciate it. Thank you. And, man, let's talk about these Bulls, man.
Sounds good. Here we are, 21-12. I've always viewed you and Chris as two of the saner voices in the wilderness. You know, I don't know how you feel, but I listen to a lot of talk radio, a lot of sports radio, and I just flabbergasted at the, you know, the level of hate sometimes for guys like Rose and this team in general, and management in general, for Coach Hoiberg in general. And now here we are with the fifth best record in the NBA at 21-12. I'd like to get your impressions on so far, where we're at, where you think we're going, just your overall take on the beloved Bulls right now.
Well, of course I'm happy with where we are. You know, a nice five-game winning streak. Leaders are starting to emerge. They're starting to gel as a team. I've been preaching patience from the beginning. I don't understand why people were so up in arms about a new coach looking like a new coach. He's brand new. He's never done this before in the NBA. Of course, his system is going to be new. There's going to be bumps. There's going to be ups and downs. Derrick Rose having the orbital bone broken in his face, having double vision, finding out which guys could do what, still trying to get trust in Bobby Portis early on. It was just about him finding his way, and it seems that he's now found his way. I preached it a million times on the show, Fred. I kept saying, relax, relax, relax. Just calm down. I'd rather have these issues now, you know, and then have them corrected and then move on later and then see an improvement. Because what I'm proud of Hoiberg for doing is not only just making mistakes, because you're going to make mistakes, but he's learning from the mistakes and not making the same ones. That's the entire problem I had with Coach Tibbs last year, was he was the very definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. But when Hoiberg when he was messing up and when things didn't go right, he said, okay, well, that didn't work. Let me change it up. And let me give you an example, Fred. When they had the game against Dallas, when Derrick Rose got that five-second call, he was standing right next to Coach Hoiberg that whole time, okay? Now, all our Chris and I were screaming was, well, the coach is supposed to be the one to call that timeout. He sees that he's running out of time. He's supposed to run and call that timeout, and he didn't do that. That's a mistake. The very next game, when it was the fourth quarter and the time was running down, you saw Fred Hoiberg run on the court and call timeout to the official. That showed me, like, okay, right, I made a mistake. I'm not going to do it again. I'm going to be more vocal about this. I'm going to go ahead and change it up. He's doing it like that. He's doing it with his lineups, with everything. He's like, okay, that's a mistake. That didn't work. Let's move on. Let's try something different. And you're just seeing that come to fruition now, and the team's looking better. And, of course, there's more time to go, but I like where we're at right now.
You know, you bring up a great point, and this is what I like about Hoiberg, too, and you've seen it in the past week, is, again, some matchups, you saw it when Derek was out. He went with Aaron Brooks. He went with Aaron a lot against the Knicks. You know, they really didn't have guards that could hurt you. But then you come when they play Milwaukee or some of the other games, he brought back Aaron's minutes, even though he was playing well, and put in Kirk. You know, I'm not a Heinrich fan, but I will probably give him the edge defensively over Brooks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You see him actually play the matchups and not have this pre-programmed, all right, you're coming in at this time, you're coming in at this time, and, you know, this is where I'm going to bring in, you know, McDermott. That's not how he does it. And I really admire that. I mean, you saw it last year when Rose was out and we had Dunleavy out. He's just playing Kirk 27 minutes, 28 minutes.
Right.
He's playing them no matter what. And I see adjustments from Coach, so Fred. So, there's just a reflexive action from the fan base to hate management, to dislike Coach Fred because he's not Coach Tibbs. And I never understood it. You know, Coach Tibbs is a great coach, but it was time for him to go. And I think we're both on the same page with this. I think we're moving in the right direction. And it's not saying that Coach Tibbs was bad, but his time is gone and passed. And unless that guy evolves, he's never going to win a title. You know, so.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you said, and you hit it on the head, especially with Heinrich. There have been at least two games this season where I've said, wow, Hoiberg really managed those minutes beautifully this game. Like, guys are not playing over
right. The
minute. Like, he's not bringing in, like you said, Heinrich for 29 minutes, 30 minutes. He's not the sixth man off the bench. He's not going to play an entire fourth quarter. And he's using him correctly. And as you can see, he has been healthier. He actually was like, oh, I'm healthy and I'm not tired. Well, I can actually shoot now. Okay, let me hit a consistent jump shot. He's not a great shooter. We know that. But he can at least be a consistent, you know, jump shot. At least, you know, keep the floor space, you know, by hitting something. And he's doing that. And this is the best I've seen him play since the return of Kirk, to be honest. Like, since he's come back here, this is the best I've seen him play because he's being used right. He understands he's older. He can't run around there like Coach Hill was having him do. And
absolutely
not being running to the ground. And he's letting the guys who are not showing signs of fatigue with the minutes he's letting them play, like Jimmy Butler. Like, Jimmy Butler doesn't mind playing 38, 39 minutes a game. Fine, go ahead. And, you know, you're turning into our best player. Great, fine, then you get these minutes. Derek, we're going to keep managing your minutes. Paul Gasol, you're a veteran. Hey, you need a day off after a four overtime game? Fine. You know what I'm saying? Like these are simple things that an NBA team should do all the time. And it's just refreshing. It really is. It's refreshing to me to see this.
Yeah, you know, I had no problem with Butler playing a lot of minutes, you know, for Fred because he doesn't have a choice. He's short there with the injuries right now to Dunleavy. I had problems with Tibbs having Luol Deng lead the league in minutes when he had Kyle Korver and you know, Jimmy Butler and guys on the bench who are easily capable of just lessening the load. That was my whole point. You know, Fred's kind of in a position with Butler right now. He has to play him a lot of minutes. He really doesn't have a choice until Dunleavy gets back. You can't really expect the Bulls to win consistently with it. But then again, the other thing I like is if the Bulls are up by 20, you're not going to see him play. I don't think him and Paul played in the fourth quarter of that Knicks game at all. You know, and you think that would have happened last year? They both would have played 10 minutes at a 20-point, you know, they were up by 20 in the fourth. So I completely agree with you. You know, I don't want to harp on it anymore. I know a lot of people think I'm a Tibbs hater. I'm not, but it was clear the guy had major issues. And it was time for him to go. And I know there's a lot of people secretly cheering that this team just falls on its face because of that. You know, so if you're going to be like that, then just pound sand and jump off a bridge because you're not a real Bulls fan if you're like that, you know.
You're absolutely right. I was going to say, I agree with you on the Tibbs hater part because I'm not a Tibbs hater. I mean, I can't. When you would come on our show, I think it was only one year where I didn't think Tibbs shouldn't have been running for Coach of the Year because of the way he was doing, man. So, no, I'm not a Tibbs hater at all. It's just when you're doing insane things, you know, I'm going to point them out. That's all.
Absolutely. And, yeah, he deserved to be coach here a lot of those years, but I never really bought the narrative that this team was completely bereft of talent and, you know, he was the guy doing all this magic. That's what you hear from a lot of fans that, oh, this team had nothing. We just, man, look what he was able to pull out of this horrible roster. I don't buy that at all. I mean, you had Taj Gibson and Miller, two of the best interior defenders in basketball. They were for the greater part of 5 years. And you're a defensive coach. You know, that's what you need. You need talent. You don't win. Tibbs never got one rebound and one pass or one point. It's the players. It's a players' league, and they win the titles. But, you know, I've talked ad nauseum on this. I'd like to get your opinion on this whole debate on, is this Jimmy's team? Is it Derek's team? I think for a long time, and you and I have been in agreement, I've always been on a Rose fan. I've defended him. He started out the season, I felt, just horribly shooting the ball. But you got to think logically that probably had something to do with his eye, and I think he's definitely picked it up here recently. But what's your take on that whole debate? Whose team is it? Is it a ridiculous debate? In your opinion, whose team is it, or is it something we shouldn't even be discussing?
Oh, I don't mind the discussion at all, because you would like to know that as far as every team, like who's the one, who's the standout guy on your team. You would like to know that. I don't have a problem with stating it. You're right about Derek. I'm definitely a Derek Rose fan. For the longest, I've always said it's Derek Rose's team. All the way up to even in this season, it always felt like it's Derek Rose's team. I mean, because he is the only one I've seen actually prove it. With winning games in the playoffs, with the MVPs, you know, with the early All-Star appearances. The injuries are what, you know, took him down. Like you said, he was shooting horribly this year, but it's hard to shoot great when you see three baskets. And you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to shoot at the one in the middle. Little tough to do. But as you can see, his vision came back and he got a little better. I think now, though, that this is Jimmy Butler's team. And the only reason I think that, Fred, is because the Bulls told me that. In the game against Toronto, when Jimmy Butler had that Jordan-esque game, when he dropped 40, which is ridiculous, he dropped 40 and a half, you saw the team not just figuratively rally around him, literally rally around Jimmy Butler on the court.
Right.
When is the last time you've seen a regular season game where the team just huddles around one player and you know, looks like they're having a prayer circle after a regular season game this early in the season? That lets you know what that meant to that team, and that lets you know what Jimmy Butler and what he did meant to that team, because they all just rallied around him, literally. And when your team literally rallies around someone and says, okay, you're the one we follow, I can't sit and say that it's Derrick Rose's team anymore, because the team has spoken.
Great point. I still feel, though, I don't think it has to be defined, hey, this is Derek's team, this is Jimmy's team. To me, the ceiling for the Bulls is still on Derek Rose. I think Butler is where he's going to be. He's either the first or second best shooting guard in the NBA.
Yes.
Derek, though, there's a lot more volatility to where he's at. I mean, some nights he's in the top five point guards in the NBA. Unfortunately, this year, for more often than not, he's been, you know, probably sometimes even on the lower half. So that's where, to me, the whole success of this team is dependent on which one of these, how these two guys work together, how they mesh, especially on the offensive end, and how, you know, because theoretically, people forget this. Last year, the Bulls were in the first round of the playoffs. Milwaukee was doubling Gasol in the post.
Yeah.
Theoretically, you have a team that has three guys that could potentially demand a double team. That is a recipe for a championship team. And I'm starting to see it. I love it when they do the pick and roll. Rose or Butler with the pick and pop with Gasol at the top of the key. That's almost becoming unguardable, you know, for a team. So that's why you're really starting to see that mesh, and then they're able to counter the opposite side now. It's really great to see. So do you concur then with me, though, where this team goes is still more dependent on Derek than it is Jimmy?
I absolutely agree with that, Fred. Jimmy can average 30. If Derrick Rose doesn't do what Derrick Rose does, this team isn't going anywhere, period. It's that simple. This is predicated. In the NBA, you know you need at least three stars on your team. You need three. So Jimmy can do his 30, and you got Paul Gasol without Derrick Rose, because Jimmy Butler is not going to every night, at least in my opinion, every night, I don't think Jimmy Butler is going to carry the team, and I don't want him to either. You know, I want this to be an equal thing. You know, I don't want him to. And I think without Derrick Rose, because he still instills fear in defenses. They still come with that double team on Derek to try to get the ball out of his hands. When he penetrates to the bucket, he's still drawing three, four players to come try to guard him, because they remember what he did. And you're seeing that, like you said, you're seeing the result now of him being healthier, going to the bucket more and scoring more. But if Derek Rose does Derek Rose like things, this team is terrifying. Period. Like they're terrifying, and it is predicated definitely on Derek, because I already know what Jimmy's going to do. And I kept saying, if Jimmy wants to be the man, he has to be the man. And that's what Jimmy has been doing, 40 points and a half, 32 and 10 last game. stepping up. I just didn't want him to talk. I'm like, don't talk about it. Be about it. You know, you got to show and prove on that court. You know, Derek didn't do a lot of talking. He just showed you, you know. And I don't have a problem with Jimmy saying what he did, but you got to play like you too. You can't be the best player on the team averaging 20. If you're the best player on the team, you got to go 25. And it's like Jimmy heard exactly what I said. Because as soon as I said it, he started doing these things. And, yeah, but they still will only go as far as Derrick Rose goes. Because if Rose is not on, I mean, that hurts. You know, if Rose is not on and not doing his thing and at the top of his game, that's going to hurt the chances. That's going to really hurt the chances of guys, defenses will change. They won't have to defend certain ways. I totally agree with you, Fred. It's definitely predicated on those.
If Dunleavy doesn't come back, I still feel this team is a shooter short. And I think along these lines are a perimeter player short. I keep on hearing a lot of talk now, well, we got a loaded front court now with the emergence of Bobby Portis. No denying that. The kid's been really impressive. But there's a lot of talk, which guy should we move? I'd estimate, you know, the vast majority of fans in the fan base think that the guy to move is Gasol. But I can't help noticing that since the beginning of 2014, I think the Bulls are 18-5 in games that Noah has missed. 18-5. That's a significant number of games as a sample size. I'd like to get your opinion on who they should move.
You know, I can say my partner Chris on our show Ball on Bulls on ballsports.com. Chris has been trying to trade Joakim Noah since he got here. I have been on the total opposite spectrum of that. I love Joakim Noah. I think his intangibles are truly incredible in what he brings to this team as far as the heart. He was a leader when we needed one. He was just a great, he was a really, really good, I'm not going to just say great, but he was a really, really good basketball player. But when your knees go out and you're 7 feet tall, and of course this is something else I always fought the Tibbs for, because Fred, you pointed out to me that Joakim Noah was at the top of the league in minutes, which is insane. For a center, that's just crazy. That's really, really crazy. And so you saw where his career was going. And here it is. This is where it is now. He gets injured, his bad knees. He was playing better. You got to say he was playing better.
Absolutely, he was.
But I would say if we're going to talk expendable, and it hurts to say because I love him. I really do. But Joakim Noah is probably the most expendable. Personally, I think Taj Gibson is not far behind that. Because of the contract, because I think his contract is up next year, if I'm not mistaken. And so I think they should trade Taj, and you might get something better than you would for Joakim Noah. But because, like you said, the emergence of, well, I call him Bobby Garnett, because I've been calling him that since before the summer league, because I saw what he could be, and people laughed at me when I was calling him Bobby Garnett in the summer league, and now they're not. They're not laughing at me no more. They're not really laughing, but I saw this guy's potential, and potentially, I just always felt he's Kevin Garnett potentially, you know, with a 3-point shot. That's terrifying. And watching his emergence has really made not just one player expendable, but I'm telling you, he's made two players expendable. He's made Ty Gibson and Joakim Noah expendable. And I'm not getting rid of Paul Gasol because personally, I still feel you're trying to make a run this year. You're still trying to make a run at a title. And if you're trying to make a run at a title, he's your third best player. So I don't see why you would trade the third best player. If this team was just average right now, then yeah, okay, fine. But like you said, what, we have fifth best record in the league? Yeah, they're trying to win. So I say hold on to Gasol and let him play. But... Which, as far as trading, it looks like Noah. It looks like Noah's probably the most expendable. I really don't want to, because that's me being selfish, because I really do like Joakim Noah a lot, and I still feel he has a lot to offer, and you're going to need guys to do the dirty work at some point in time in the playoffs. But the way Bobby Portis plays and the energy that he brings, is the same as Noah's energy. The rebounding he brings is the same as Taj Gibson's rebounding. But he's a better shooter than both of them. And he's a great offensive rebounder also. And, I mean, he just does so much of, and he spaces the floor. Like, when's the last time you've seen guys like that space the floor?
Agreed.
It's scary watching him, man. And, yeah, so he's made two people expendable, and I guess Joakim Noah, it hurts to say, but I guess Joakim Noah is the one.
You know, I would say, too, the thing about Portis, though, is people got to remember, you know, the disrespect that Paul gets with the fan base is so ridiculous to me. I mean, people just think that basically, you know, the double doubles, it's like 13 rebounds just randomly fall into his gut. You know, that's what the whole general attitude is. And my point is with Portis, I love Portis. I think he's going to be a fantastic player. Rookies don't get calls in the playoffs. If you're about winning now, we heard the same thing last year, and I was befuddled by it last year, you know, when Nico had that fantastic March. Let's forget about, you know, let's give him the minutes, and I'm like, or expected him to carry us in the playoffs. And he was absolutely horrific. Wasn't his fault. It's just that they don't get calls. They usually don't perform well. There's a reason, because it's a bigger stage and it's a tougher stage, right? So to be dependent on Portis this year, to me, is just not – it's misguided. I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. Me, I want to do whatever it takes. If it's realistic that Dunleavy is going to come back, I don't even want to move Mate. I think this team can win a title. But if Dunleavy's not coming back, you got to find one more shooter. I don't know who that is. And to me, with the, you know, expiring contract, you know, probably Noah's their most movable piece. I know some people say Gasol, but he's only making $7 million. What are you going to get in return, you know, for that? He makes far less than he's worth, which makes his value to me in a trade less likely. What do you think?
I totally agree with you, and plus him getting injured like he did really hurt. Really hurt that argument of who are we going to trade? I mean, I don't even think Gasol should be brought up. Honestly, like you said, those rebounds don't just fall in your gut. Like, just because he's 7 foot doesn't mean he's going to average a double double. And I mean, last game, I mean, look at it. What he did last game, I was looking at his stats. On top of my head, I think he had 19 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, and 4 blocks. Like, that's a hell of a stat line. You know, for a guy that people say, you know, for a guy who people say can't play the defense like he can play and all these other things. I mean, he does it in the key moments, and that's what I've seen him do. He gets a key block when you need it. He gets that key rebound. And you don't want to break up the relationship him and Jimmy Butler have now developed with each other, and the relationship that he and Derrick Rose have off that pick and roll. Like you said, that alley-oop play that Butler and Gasol do is a weapon now. Like, you're going to see that twice, maybe 3 times a game, and it usually works. So why would you go and break that up, you know, to save some money and bring that in? If you're serious about winning the championship, you keep your best players there. And you try to move your players who you feel like, you know, interchangeable, and bring in something that you feel your team is lacking, you feel that you need. Now, I do agree with you as far as the rookie is concerned, and that's a great point. And it's funny because I don't think that'd even be a liability, because I feel Nico Mirotić to this point have been pretty disappointing in his play.
No doubt.
He's been terrible. And I think that they didn't expect him to be this inconsistent in his second year. And he's been inconsistent. And he's been better. He got better these last 2 games. I mean, he shot better. He's playing a little bit better, and that's fine. But I expect his kind of inconsistency more out of Tony Snell than I did out of Nico Mirotić. And I thought I would see more from Nico. Now, like, it's a long season, and it's more to go. But up until this point, yeah, I've been pretty disappointed with Nico's play. But I think if Nico gets his play up, I mean, I don't see – that's where you're shutting down all the weaknesses. When Nico decides that, hey, I'm 7 feet tall and I can shoot, and, you know, I don't need to be Vlade Divac, you know, dance around and get these flops on all day long. And, you know, I don't have to take half-court threes, even though I might make 3 out of 10. You know, or 2 out of 10.
Right.
I don't, no need to take them all the time.
I can't agree more. There's such an effort to, like, just say he's a power forward. He can't play the three. And, you know, I agree he's probably better at the power forward position. But to me, the guy is not hitting the three this year. And he, frankly, didn't hit it last year. He shot 30% from three last year. So I think he has an underrated post game. The whole goal with Nico should be to get the ball to him in the post on smaller threes while we're kind of lacking at the three right now with Dunleavy out. And I think it's working. I mean, we've won five in a row with him basically playing at the three. There's going to be some matchups some nights where he's not going to be able to take the three, you know, whoever that guy is. But kind of few and far between. There's not a ton of incredible threes if you look at the league, you know, that, oh, Nico's, he's not going to have any chance with him. I can guarantee you he should be able to take every three in this league with the exception of LeBron, maybe a few others, and take them right into the post. So he's been frustrating to me this year, frankly. I don't think he's shot the ball. You know, he's been terrible. He's, for the most part, and he's so beloved in the fan base. Like, this guy's the answer to everything, and I never bought into that. You know, I think he's a good player, and I think he's hopefully going to step it up and get better and build more confidence. But our path to a title is not dependent on Nico Mirotić. It's far more dependent on Rose, Butler, to a lesser extent, Saul, you know, maybe Noah and Taj. So,
yes, I totally agree with that. And I just once again want to preach patience to Bulls fans and just have patience with the team. And we don't get too high when we're going good and don't get too low when it's going bad, because this is a brand new coach, brand new system, and you're seeing emergence of guys that you didn't see last year. Last year you didn't see a full Derrick Rose. Like, Derrick Rose is getting to the point where he's playing more, you know, like more consistently. And you didn't see this kind of Jimmy Butler last year. You know, you didn't even see Bobby Portis, you know. Joakim Noah was in the starting lineup. Like, there's a lot of changes. And with changes, it's gonna be different. You know, it's not like Golden State. There were no real changes on Golden State other than the coach. Their lineup was set.
Right.
You know, they knew who they had. They probably said, Iguodala come off the bench. And that was probably it. Like, that's
and
just
Draymond
one move.
Green. Yep.
Right. And insert Draymond and let Draymond run sometimes, you know, be a five. Like, those are things that a coach implements. That's not a huge personnel change like that's going on your floor. Like, our starting five is totally different. You know what I mean? Like, it's a whole new starting five with the emergence of guys. You know, guys are emerging and guys are getting better. And I just want to preach patience to Bulls fans. Enjoy it while it's going great and just don't get so low when it's not, you know. But, I'm excited about the team because – every time I pick a game to judge them, Fred, they show up. And I always judge them on the big games. And I was like, I'm going to judge them against OKC. That's why I told people I was going to start judging that team. And they came out and did their thing. And I'm going to judge them against the really great teams they played. And what are they, 4-1 against these really great teams or something like that?
4-1 against four teams ahead of them. They beat OKC twice. They beat the Spurs. They beat the Cavs. And they lost to the Warriors in a fairly close game in Golden State.
Really?
Yep.
They were Derrick Rose short of beating Golden State. They were Derrick Rose short.
Exactly. I can't agree with you enough. Hey, Dave, I got to hit the ground running, but I can't thank you enough for coming on, Big D. I love the stuff that you guys do on Ball. For the listeners, could you share the ways they can get in touch with you, follow you on Twitter, and how do they get the show?
Ball Sports, BAWLSports.com is the site. You can go to it. You'll check out our show, Ball on Bulls. On Twitter, it's at Ball Sports, BAWL Sports. If you just want to type in ball.com, that works also. So check us out. We're on there. We're always there. Fred is always on our show. And yeah, man, we love the Bulls and we love sports and other random, silly, crazy things that you might, you know, if you want to laugh and get some knowledge, you'll come to the right place at Ball on Bull.
I'm going to be a regular guest now. I'm honored to have a little spot on the show going forward.
Yes.
I'm really excited about that. So everybody check it out, and I'll be tweeting out when I'm on there. Hey, man, all the best to you in 2016. We got to have you and Chris on again soon. Looking forward to the game tonight against Celtics.
Hey, go Bulls, man, and Happy New Year to you and yours, Fred. You know, hey, bro, number love for you, brother. You know that.
Sounds good. Take it easy, Big D. All right, man.
Have a good one.
All right. Bye-bye.